We made this.
Hello and welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host Baz Greenland, and in this episode we are going to discuss the third episode of Disney Plus series Marvel's Hawkeye, Echoes. In this episode, captured by the Tracksuit Mafia, Clint and Kate face down the legacy of Ronan in battling the enigmatic Maya Lopez, the deaf leader of a gang seeking vengeance for the death of her father. Meanwhile, as they work to escape, Hawkeye and his new protege start piecing together a conspiracy that strikes for Kate, potentially close to home. So, joining me to discuss this episode is my guest, host of We Made This podcast, Pick a Disc, and Shipwreck and Commerce, Matt Latham. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm glad to be on I've been on a Spider-Man tour, but this is my first kind of in-episode appearance on 616, so I'm looking forward to finally being on here.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's my second. I did 1616 on What If, the Killmonger episode. So yeah, it's good to kind of jump on these weekly episodes as well. So, are you enjoying Hawkeye so far?
Oh, immensely. Yeah, I think this might end up being at the moment, it's currently my favourite of the TV series we've had from the MCU so far. It's ridiculously fun. It's great. I don't know whether that's part of low expectations, because it's like, oh, because at Hawkeye there's a kind of ongoing joke of Hawkeye being the lesser known, lesser liked member of the Avengers, but I'm generally surprised how much I'm enjoying this so far.
Yeah, I'm completely agreeing with you as well. I think it's not beating WandaVision for me yet. WandaVision, I think, is still the pinnacle of the Phase 4 Disney Plus shows. Oh. But this is so entertaining, and I know we'll get into it, but the chemistry between Clint and Kate is great, and I think, yeah, maybe because we're getting in the Christmas spirit now and it's a bit more festive, but I'm enjoying the fact that it's kind of playing like a Christmas movie meets Marvel action series. It's great. It's so much fun. So would you rank, in terms of all the Phase 4 content, including the movies, would you rank it pretty high then?
Yeah, I think WandaVision is a close second, because I really enjoy WandaVision, but I was much more in the kind of exploration of American sitcom history aspect, which kind of started to fade halfway through it. So, but this, I think this might be my favorite part of the Phase 4, I think, so far. It's a 90s, a late 80s, early 90s action movie, just slightly stretched out, but it doesn't, and it's paced quite well so far. And yeah, that's what I'm really enjoying about it.
Yeah, definitely. I think Shang-Chi is also one of my favourites from the Phase 4 stuff, but it could easily be in my top three. I think it's just so entertaining, and it's interesting that it's a series as well, because Hawkeye is the only Avenger that hasn't got a movie. But I know there's been talk of they planned it as a movie and decided to go over a series, and it's like, oh, is that true, or did they actually think, is Hawkeye big enough to own his own movie? I don't know, but I'm liking this. I think that the benefits of a TV series is that, you know, six episodes, you get to flesh out the story and a bit more. There would be stuff lost, I think, if it was just a movie. I think it would be entertaining. I think it'd be fun, but I think it'd probably be a bit more mid-tier, I think, if it was a movie, because I think you lose some of the magic you get from the kind of weekly episodes you get now.
Yeah, and I think we'll get into a bit more as well, but this episode especially, I think you can apply a kind of movie structure to it, but I think you would lose a lot of what I really liked about this episode in the movie, and I think it's the right call, I think, to make this a TV series.
Do you know much about the Hawkeye from the comics?
Not really, no. The only knowledge I've got of Hawkeye is that I keep getting confused with Oliver Queen.
Well, I'm a big Arrow fan. I mean, it's interesting. I'm watching this, and there are some moments, even in this episode, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm an Arrowverse fan. I think it's probably gone too long, and that's another whole other story. But you know, when it's good, I loved Arrow, and I thought it could be a really good series. I think this is better. I think it's got all the budget and the ambition maybe that Arrow didn't have because it's a 22 episode series. But you know, there were some moments in Arrow that could be really, really great, particularly the action sequences. And there were moments in this episode which reminded me a little bit of that. So yeah, it's you know, the world's greatest archer. Is it Oliver Queen over in DC? Is it Hawkeye? Is it now Kate? Obviously, had the discussion in the episode as well. So it'd be fun to see. So yeah, I don't really know much about the comic. I know that Kate is a protege in the comics. I know that Maya is a big character in the comics as well, but I don't really know much beyond that, really. So I've always been a fan of Hawkeye. I've always been a fan of Jeremy Renner's performance, but it's always been a solid part of the ensemble. I can see why he maybe didn't get the lead film that the others might have had, because I don't think he's as big a star. He's much more grounded, but I think he worked for this show. So
I think this is the Iron Man 3 principle. I say it's the principle, it's something I've just made up off the top of my head as a comparison, in that I think one of the benefits you get from the MCU is the character development and the arcs of the development. And I think Iron Man 3 is one of my favourite films in the franchise, and and for a third film in the series, it's gotten quite a lot of critical praise. And a lot of that, I think, is because it's dealing with the consequences of the last thing that happened in the main character's life, which is in terms of Avengers Assemble, if you're in the UK, where like Tony giving himself PTSD for nearly killing himself throwing a nuclear warhead into space, and Iron Man 3 takes time to explore the impact of that. And I think Hawkeye basically uses the moment to explore pretty much almost exploring the PTSD that Clint Barton has because of all sorts of things that he's done, all the actions that he's done as a background character, and basically giving him the chance to breathe and the audience to kind of explore the consequences of his actions. Because he's not like the most explored character so far, but he's had very pivotal moments that we've seen on screen, and we've now got the kind of payoff to that. And I think the series is working well to that, and the fact we haven't fully seen all the payoff yet in terms of what happens when he's revealed to be Ronin and all that kind of stuff, it's quite exciting. But I don't think that if you had a Hawkeye film before Infinity War, it wouldn't have worked. I don't think it would not be as interesting or potentially as exciting as this is.
No, absolutely. I think the most interesting thing I really like this was in Ultron, where you saw his family life and you saw a completely different side to him. Mm-hmm. That was great. I really liked the Hawkeye stuff that was brought into Ultron, because it gave some depth to the character, who otherwise was kind of the slightly quippy, court archer psychic of Black Widow. And, you know, I think that's what he was really mostly outside of the franchise, except for Ultron. And, of course, the Ronan stuff in Endgame. So, yeah, I'm really glad you're exploring that. And it's interesting you talk about Iron Man 3 as well. And maybe it's why it's not a movie, because actually, if you think, there's a lot of very similarities. You know, there's a dealing with that trauma, you know, his trauma as a Ronin. You know, it's they're both set at Christmas. They've both got a kind of a quippy young sidekick. You know, I think you probably even see the villains won't miss me who we expect as we go on. So I think there's a lot of kind of similarities.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to make my statement claim there. There's no way that, what's his name, from Better Call Saul's the villain. It is obviously her mom. I am convinced. Yeah, I mean, you don't cast... Again, it's down to casting. The surname of the actress, Vera Farmiga.
Vera Farmiga, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, you don't cast Norma Bates in a role that we've not really seen much in. So I'm going to state my claim in saying that if she's not the main antagonist, she's definitely involved a lot more. And that's down to the casting again. You do not waste that actress in what we've seen her on.
Absolutely. There's a lot we haven't seen. And I almost is a shame that we're halfway through, because I almost wish it was 10 episodes, because I think we're felt like we're on top of the iceberg here, which is great. I mean, we're not going to get any of that kind of lag you sometimes get with other shows, even the Netflix DC shows. And I think I want to talk about some of the Daredevil elements on this in a minute, but even those shows I think because they're one continuous story, you'd feel a bit of a lag at times. And certainly within like the hour of our shows, 23 episodes, there's always going to be duff episodes in there. It's just, you know, it's dragging out. Whereas I think I like in one way that it's six episodes because it's just really succinct and punchy and getting to the point where we give enough time for that kind of character development. But I always wish there was more because I feel like we're just getting started.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest positives I'll give to this is that it's paced perfectly. I mean, jumping to the end, he got to the end, that final shot, and suddenly he went directed by Bert and Bertie. I'm like, wait, what? That's only, we've only been watching it for 15 minutes. And I'm like, and I flipped over and it's like 37 minutes into the episode and stuff. And I was like, how the bloody hell? So, well, nobody watched it a second time last night. I made a point to pause it to see how long the episode had gone at the end of the car chase set piece, and it was about 24 minutes and into that, so it was over. It was pretty much two thirds of the episode up to the car chase. I'm like, wait, what, really?
Yeah.
and I'm like, I don't know how they've done it, but somehow Marvel have managed to distort time in terms of pacing.
I think that's like WandaVision. Like WandaVision, it flies past. It's bang, it's punchy, and yes, it's like you enjoy it so much, and suddenly it's over. I want more. I like that it's weekly, but I want the next one now. I think so. Yeah, definitely a lot of fun. So let's get into Echoes itself then. So what would you give Echoes out of 10?
I want to give it a 9. Purely because we've not seen the full package, so to speak. I mean, like, I doubt it will, but we can suddenly, it could be absolute pants from now on. So we could have a great first half, and then it could be like the worst thing the MCU's ever done. It could make the Dark World feel good. So I don't want to give it a 10 without, but I'm going to give it a 9 because I really enjoyed it. And I did not find it a slog watching it a second time.
I'm kind of the same. I'm almost like, is it 8 or is it a 9? I think it's probably an 8 overall in what it's going to be, but it almost feels like a 9 now because it's just so much fun. And that car chase, I can't wait to talk about the car chase sequence as well. It was just an absolute blast. But before we get into that, let's talk about Maya first. So in this episode, we're introduced to Alacra Cox as Maya Lopez, a character many Marvel fans would know as Echo, a deaf female superhero. Okay. Is... I don't know if you know, it's been largely publicised. I don't think it's really spoilery so much because it is been publicised that she's going to get her own Disney Plus series. So Echo is big. She's going to be big in the MCU. I don't know in what way. It's been publicised. I've mentioned it because it's been publicised. But so I don't really know anything about her apart from that. There's an Echo series and this is the character. But what did you think of her introduction?
It was interesting. It was interesting because I think it's developed as... building up the antagonist, and if we want to go back to the kind of Netflix model, or the basically streaming shows as a whole, one of the things that this medium gives these series the chance to do, and you've seen it in the Netflix shows, is that there's a moment, and it's usually around kind of after the first act where they'll take a pause, and then you'll have a longer focus on developing the antagonists. The antagonists for the series, and I think when we first saw Daredevil on Netflix, one of the big things it was praised for was that this was the era where everyone was like kind of saying it was like all the villains that if it's not Loki, MCU villains are quite nondescript and name the villain from the first Thor film that isn't Loki, and I can't remember what his name was. I can't remember who Christopher Eccleston's character name is. The Dark Elf or something like that. So when like the streaming era came in, it was like, oh, okay, you've got the ability to kind of bit more depth to the villains and stuff, include like in Daredevil season 1, which we might mention a bit later on, it was like one of the first examples of that. And I had no idea it was Echo at all. So to me, watching this, it was just like, okay, we're developing the villain, so we're going to have this is the part of the streaming series where we have the focus on who the villain is, or this new character who we're going to learn a bit more. And so like, and part of me was thinking like, oh, is this going to end up being the whole episode?
I think if it was a Netflix show, I think it would. I think this would be the whole Echo episode and then back to the action. But with 13 episodes, I think, yeah, because it's 6, it's basically a truncated 5 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but like, yes, and it's probably one of the reasons I quite liked this episode was that, and part of me was like, oh no, I hope it's not going to, I want to see Clint and Kate just bicker at each other, and then like, and it start, and as you start to kind of like worry about that, it immediately cuts back to that. And I think it's so, and it, you get enough, so you got enough of who the character is, you get enough of her backstory, you get to see the death of her dad at Ronan's hands, and that's enough to know. That's like, so you got in the space of like 7-8 minutes what Netflix would spend an hour doing. And I think it was quite to the punch. I've got an idea of who this person was. You get a kind of almost a slight sympathetic view of the character, so you understand where she's coming from. And as you said, now that she's actually the character Echo, who I have absolutely no idea at all, I'm saying, okay, yeah, I can potentially see why this would suddenly end up being the protagonist of something. Yeah, because there's enough there to not make them a villain. There's hints, and with the overarching idea of other elements being the big bad of the series, it's enough to be interesting for a character.
Definitely, yeah. Again, being a series rather than a film, you can have more than one villain, so you can have her as a villain to start with and certainly flesh her out. And yeah, I thought it was really, really good. And you were talking about Daredevil, it's a couple of things. I think that the Ronan attack you saw from her point of view had big Daredevil vibes, with the big fight going inside the building when she saw from the outside. That really kind of reminds me of those big, immensely action sequences in the Daredevil, which is terrific. And the other big, I guess, MCU-sized elephant in the room is the identity of the uncle.
Yes. Now, I did not. I had no idea. And I had no idea. And who this was supposed to be referencing, who we're going to... I'm going to assume that if anyone's listening to this who's keeping away from spoilers, I guess we're going to speculate.
We are speculating, because actually, even I think we both know where we're speculating too, but I think it's nothing being confirmed either. So it is speculation.
Yeah.
If you want to skip forward a couple of minutes, that's fine. But I think we're going to go into a little bit of speculation here based on what we think we've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So the idea being is that it's Wilson Fisk. And there's been a lot of hint. There's been a lot of kind of things about, oh, is he going to show up in Hawkeye anyway? Because Vincent D'Onofrio retweeted something about Hawkeye on Twitter, just in the lead up to it, which sent the internet in a frenzy, going, oh, is he going to appear as Fisk? Is he going to appear as Fisk and stuff? In our kind of behind the scenes, we made this Discord. I can't remember. It was either yourself, it was either Craig or even Tony. Someone mentioned that there's a Vincent D'Onofrio. Is that even his surname? D'Onofrio?
I think so.
Yeah. yeah. The actor who played the villain in Men in Black, his voice, it sounds like him. And I deliberately paid attention because you hear a kind of a chuckle.
Yeah, that was it. I was like, yeah. I know that
and
chuckle.
And it sounds... you don't realise it the first time, because, I had no idea it was going to be Kingpin until I started seeing stuff on Twitter or in our We Made This Discord. And I was like, oh, okay. And as soon as you listen to it sounds just like him, and I'm like, now they're either kind of trolling or there's something there. And again, if you're going to go for the speculation that Charlie Cox is going to appear in
Spider-Man,
No Way Home, so there's all sorts of, are they going to finally start bringing them in, and with the idea of the multiverse bringing in alternative versions of characters, it theoretically could end up being it, and it does feel like they're leaning that way.
It does. I mean, there's been rumours about Charlie Cox's Daredevil coming for a long time now. I think now they Marvel have the rights to the Netflix show again, and I mean, there's talk. I mean, this is pure speculation because nothing is known, and there's, you know, speculation that he's going to be in Spider-Man Far From Home. There's speculation of a Daredevil series. There's speculation of Echo and Daredevil connects in the comics, and maybe he's going to be in that show. Maybe he's going to, you know, and Wilson Fisk is very closely connected to Echo, and so there's an Echo TV series. Oh, that sounds like a lot, but I wasn't expecting, you know, that might come at a later point. But then when I heard that laugh, I was like, oh, I know that laugh, and then there's about 3 or 4 references, including by Clint later on, to the man behind the scenes, behind the tracksuit gang, you know, someone to be afraid of, who is his uncle. And it almost feels inevitable. But as you said, Marvel have tried before. They did it with Quicksilver in WandaVision. oh, it's multiverse, we're bringing the X-Men in. Nothing like that at all. Actually, it almost was that was a complete troll at the fans, I think.
Yes, I completely forgot about that, actually, until you just referenced it. I forgot, which I think means, which probably shows how much of a non-event it was, because you suddenly saw Evan Peters show up, and it's like,
yeah,
and it's a bit of a, that might be what dragged down WandaVision for me is slightly, was the kind of deliberate kind of rug pulling.
Yeah. It was almost a bit too laugh in the face of the fans kind of thing, wasn't it? At that moment, yeah, it's nothing at all, and it's kind of. So I don't know. They've done it before. I don't know the fact that Spider-Man is coming out very soon. In fact, Spider-Man will be out before Hawkeye ends, I think. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see whether. Either way, I think there were big Daredevil vibes in that whole sequence, you know, with the attack and with Maya's storyline. It felt like Maya's storyline could easily be out of one of those Netflix shows, which maybe hints at the way it's going. So let's move on to Kate and Clint's escape then. So before we get to the wonderful, wonderful car chase sequence, and we'll probably spend half the episode talking about that, I think.
Yeah.
What did you think of the whole sequence from when they were tied up on the horses to the escape?
Again, I think it was almost potentially immaculate in terms of how it was set up. There's enough character in between the two of them, between the characters in the banter, and it's just pitch perfect. You can just feel like, I think when I've attempted to write at the moment, there's a moment where, as writers, I feel like they'll get a point where, okay, we need to dictate what the characters are doing. But you'll get to a point where in some kind of franchises, TV shows or something, where the writers will actually feel restricted because the difference being is that, like, and I think Doctor Who suffers from this a few times, where the writers just go, oh yeah, we'll just do the characters, we'll let the characters just do that, no matter what. Whereas I think some writers will take a step back saying, hang on, we can't do that because of the characters we've got. The characters have to lead the writers in what they need to do. And I think this is an example of like suddenly the, I'm not sure who wrote it actually.
The episode, I will bring it up.
Katrina Mathewson and Tana Bean. So I feel like, the two of them, I believe, must have just realised that, okay, we are restricted from what our characters can do rather than we just do, okay, the characters will do this. And they use Clint and Kate's kind of personalities very well in that sequence. I mean, it's the moment where Clint goes, okay, what you need to do, I need you to use that overconfidence you've got. Yeah, your overconfidence is your main trait. Use that. Yeah, you haven't got time to be yourself. You need to tap into this overconfidence. And she does. And they kind of write around the fact, I've seen it, I know a couple of people who I've spoke to offline in real life saying that the fight sequences are a bit iffy and they find it kind of weird that Kate suddenly knows all this kind of stuff. But I think,
she's been training for 15 years. You know, I think there's maybe it's a bit of shorthand development, but they've built in that she's this kind of gymnast and she wins medals and she wins medals in martial arts and in archery. So, you know, it's not as if, yeah, she's young, but she has those fighting skills certainly in place.
Yeah. And I think I think that kind of boost from Hawkeye or Clint, and that kind of almost positive reaffirmation kind of gives her the boost to be able to do the stuff that she does in that escape sequence. And it's very different. Okay, we'll talk about Hayley Steinfeld, an actress, a bit later, I think. But the difference in the physicality, well, it's because their age as well, because she's half his age. But the way that she moves and fights is different to how Jeremy Renner moves as Clint. And they've just got a very unique kind of sense of style. The ability for them to improvise is just like, it's just full of character. It's just full of full believed character. And it doesn't feel, sometimes we can get action sequences that kind of, you have a suspension of disbelief. Which you have to kind of do with, particularly with superhero stuff, but particularly with how they built up Hawkeye and Kate, some of the stuff that they do, it just feels quite believable. So when Clint kind of moves around and midair shoots an arrow that grazes Kazi and releases Kate, it's fully believable. And it's kind of believable in the physics of stuff. And it's all full of character and it just works so well.
Yeah.
And
it's the character work, absolutely. I mean, I love that shot where he leaps off the balcony and just and shoots the arrow. It's fantastic, you know. The and there's bits like where he's shooting three arrows at once, and the third one shoots behind him. It's almost like very yes. Legolas in Lord of the Rings. It's kind of so scary.
Yes.
It's great. It's a lot of fun, and you know, versus Kate versus Cardi with a shopping trolley. You know, she improvises. It's great. Yeah, there were some real fun moments there as well, and I thought the action sequences were brilliant. I also loved Kate giving relationship advice to Thomas about the Imagine Dragon tickets. It was just a pure Kate moment at the beginning before the fighting kicked off. And
yes, that's actually pretty cool. I forgot about that, but that's really fun.
That really made me laugh. And I mean, I like Imagine Dragons too. They're a love or hate, don't they? But it was just a real Kate moment there. In middle of that bickering, it's like, what are you doing? And it's just great. I love that banter between them. I think I could watch them banter all day. Yeah, maybe banter while shooting arrows or something. You know, you don't need much more of that. Which is why this episode was basically mostly an action sequence anyway. And it absolutely worked. I think it was the best episode yet. So shall we get into that sequence, that car chase sequence?
Yes, I love it. Here we go. Yeah.
I'm a sucker for a one-shot sequence. You know, there's a reason like the opening of Spectre was one of my favorite openings of Bond film, just because of that one-shot sequence. And you know, that whole scene, the mix of the classical music with I think I timed it this time around. It's 2.5 minutes, I think, when Kate is shooting the arrows out of the car while he's driving around, the camera's panning through the broken windows. It was absolutely sublime.
It's a very clever way for them to kind of get around the TV budget, well, quote unquote TV budget. And I feel weird saying that for an MCU show, but it's, you can kind of see a difference to how they stage action sequences to the big budget stuff. And the go-to I went to is, I think it's the second or third episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where there was that the truck chase, and that was the first time ever in an MCU property it felt cheap. Well, cheap in Disney standards, of course. And it was the first time I've ever been to kind of taken out of an MCU action sequence, because you can kind of see that it could have done with another draft and stuff, because they was trying to do a movie chase sequence on the TV budget. But then it says, if you look at the TV budget for an MCU show as opposed to the Arrowverse show, an episode of Hawkeye is probably the whole season of the CW, I think. But with this one, it keeps low key. It goes around and manages to kind of be economical in its budget, in terms of making sure it doesn't look too crazy or stretching the budget. The only time I think it ever did was perhaps the actual CGI for the purple putty, or whatever it was. Yeah, that's the only time it was kind of weird. But other than that, using the camera shots and the kind of tightness to it, it looked really impressive. It looked really impressive. It was thrilling, very entertaining, and just it never took me out.
No,
never took me out as previous ones have.
No, not at all. And again, go back to Daredevil. Daredevil had these amazing, like, I think 13 has like an 11-minute shot, which is the one shot sequence, and they have a lot in those shows. It just reminds me of that again. It's that kind of down gritty, kind of very much grounded superhero stuff, as opposed to the big Thor Ragnarok, for example, which is just like brilliant but bonkers. And I love just seeing them in action, seeing them working together, you know, the way they were working, and it was just effortlessly fun. You know, talk about the purple putty. Well, I quite liked, what is the next arrow going to be? And I loved Kate's enthusiasm for trick arrows. And you go, no, that's dangerous, that's dangerous, that's dangerous. But it was brilliant. You know, the disappointment with the plunge arrow, followed by the explosion arrow, followed by the one that kind of pulled all the Christmas trees to the truck, just to make sure you know it's a Christmas setting. You know, you've got to have Christmas trees and a Santa in there somewhere.
Yes. But I quite liked how the structure and the writing was setting them up, how they was able to escape as well, because they had the plunger arrow first. Yeah. And there was a nice joke of, what's the use of the plunger arrow? And I think one of the best examples of it, if you think, it's one of the mission, it's the buy sequence in the Mission Impossible films. I think it was Rogue Nation, I think. Is it the fourth or fifth where he's in Dubai?
Oh, yeah, fourth one, yeah.
Where pretty much, yeah, which is just, it's like one of the most perfectly crafted sequences, because there's all these kind of things that are set up. Like he just randomly picks up some sunglasses at one point, and then there's a bit where It's like Chekhov's sunglasses and the bit where like the sandstorm comes in, he puts the glasses on to protect his eyesight. It's all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of kind of Chekhov's arrows in this, but it all pays off. So it doesn't, again, going back to the escape, it just feels like it's very tightly plotted and they've thought about, okay, we need to kind of keep this low-key realism in. We can't do too much silly stuff. We need to kind of explain what we need to do and stuff. And like the plunger arrow first, and then saying the plunger arrow being used to escape on the train. They kind of get away with whether they've got Hayley Steinfeld's obviously additional dialogue saying, "Oh, that's the use of a plunger arrow," just added in randomly there. But it's all nicely set up. It all works. It's all kind of fluid. The structure is perfect, I think, and it just works. Yeah, like earlier, I mean, you don't know what arrows he's talking about, but he takes two arrows and says, no, these are dangerous. Yeah. And on the second one, you know he's talking about the pin arrow.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it goes from normal arrows to explode arrows to the pin arrow was so unexpected. This giant arrow crashed into the truck. It made it a bigger action sequence as well, because I think the car chase was very much grounded on the streets of New York. And then you get this big kind of bridge sequence, which felt like it was getting bigger and bigger, and you kind of go, how are they going to wrap this up? And of course they have a pin arrow, which is this giant arrow smashing into the truck. It was a joyful kind of resolution to that action sequence.
Yeah, and again they still managed to have kind of something that, going back to Arrow, that I think Arrow lacks so there's the occasional where Arrow has some kind of weird self awareness, perhaps with like the boxing glove arrow moments where he sticks a boxing glove on an arrow, but like there's a great self-awareness where like Kate says, "This arrow is very dangerous," and it's the USB dongle one, and he just hits him and just bounces off. And it's just a very slight gag, but they don't milk it for that long, and immediately it's like they start shooting, and it's just a great visual gag. And then it's just there, but it matches the overconfidence of Kate as a character, and how she manages to pull it off. And there's a bit where, and the Imagine Dragons guy next to him, as soon as he hits, you see the actor go, "Ah!" Like, thinking his colleague, he's like just been shot in the chest, and then he goes, "Ah!" And then suddenly stops. It's just the staging is brilliant. You just notice these things on the second rewatch, where the reaction to him being hit by the dongle, the actor, the one who gets hit, looks down and just goes, "Huh?"
What?
And the one next to him thinks, the next one panics because he thinks his friend's just been killed.
it's great. Yeah, I mean, I think every, you know, I love the music, classical music there as well, just kind of really added to it as well in the opening bits as well. I mean, it's just so much fun, and I don't think that could be done any better on any more budget, really. I think because it's people with guns and arrows, it doesn't have to be huge mega special effects, but there's enough there that it feels like it's fun. It feels like it's Marvel, you know. Even the pin arrow is a nice kind of tie into the wider MCU universe without feeling like sometimes they feel a bit forced, and they'll go like, okay, oh, and where's Captain America or something, and they say that it kind of takes you out of it. Whereas I think this one works.
Yeah.
Just, you know, he's an Avenger, and this is one of the things that, you know, it's one of the things in his skill set they use. He obviously doesn't use it very often, but it's just a lovely little tie in there as well, and I think that worked. And yeah, the swing on the train at the end was a great sequence. And I think it finished off perfectly. It was something very low-key with that conversation, the two-sided conversation on the train.
Yeah. Well, it was like, two-sided. It's one-sided. Because one of the elements as well is that Clint's hearing aid breaks, so he can't actually hear Kate's kind of mumbling. So he's pretty much having to rely on her pretty much on doing stuff because... But again, that's only because they ran out of time for him to... So he has to drive because they ran out of time. If they had slightly more time, she'll be driving and he'll be doing all the trickery with the arrows and stuff. But then he has to do that. But then he can't actually hear her complaining, so he has to kind of put his faith into this person who he's been taking the mick out of. And they have to just go on faith and stuff. And it kind of brings the best out of them in terms of that moment and stuff. I mean, like, it's one of those things you don't actually realise until the second rewatch about what was the reason for the
hearing aid being
the thing breaking. Breaking. And it was purely so that it means that they have to kind of, they lose that element of communication with each other. So they have to go on instinct. Yes. And I think that it's for Clint to realise that Kate's not just a kind of blowhard who bigs herself up, with the overconfidence you mentioned, she can actually justify that overconfidence.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I don't, if that hearing aid was still working and there was a bit more communication between the two of them, I think that opportunity for that to happen wouldn't have happened.
I think it's a really good point, actually. I thought it was a good device. It can add some attention, certainly, when they can't communicate and he has to rely on it. But you're absolutely right about how that allows her to prove herself. You know, without that, would he have let her to do what she did? And probably not. So I think it's certainly putting her centre stage, showing that she is capable. And it's interesting, by the end of that sequence, going back to that the pim arrow, he's almost like instructing her what to do. He's training her by the end of that sequence. Yeah. He's her mentor, showing her what to do. So it goes from...
And she can't really question, because I think quite a few times, particularly in the last episode, she was like, but why are we doing this? Why? She can't do that. So she just has to do it. So she realizes that she can't keep asking the questions that she keeps asking him, because he won't listen. And I think that just means that she just does it out of instinct as well. And also I think it also helps with a bit later on where he's trying to speak to his son on the phone and he can't hear him. And because of the ear thing, it helps bond. I think it gives her a more appreciation of his family life as well. And it helps create a bond between the two later on, because he can't hear. So she's kind of interpreting the phone call as well. And you can kind of see the two of them kind of develop a closer bond because of it. It's a quite clever little trick that they use to help not only provide action sequence but also for the character later on, and also for a great gag at the end, great gag where he just turns it off when she's
that was great. Yeah, the whole use of the damaged hearing aid, I mean, obviously not only does it show, you know, it kind of builds on what you see in the first two episodes. Actually, he's gone for a lot as this guy, you know, he's been working in 20 years, he's been an Avenger for about 10 years, and you know, he's damaged by this as well, as much as everyone else. You know, it almost gives a valid reason, not just to the family, but actually he's not necessarily capable of being an Avenger much longer. So if this series does become him essentially passing the torch on, it feels kind of natural. Right? He's not just going to give it up. He's giving up because of his family, but also giving up because actually he's not able to do the kind of things that he's been doing for the last 10 years. So I think that shows how he's been compromised by what's happened. But I think, yeah, it does allow for that bond between them. You know, without, you know, because one of the best things about Kate and Clint in that opening sequence and the last two and the second episode is the banter between them. It's just effortlessly fun to listen to, but it does get in the way at the same time. So when you strip that out and he can't hear her, you know, he has to be on instinct. I think that really does build that bond nicely. I mean, the phone call with his son Daniel and Kate helping, was that a lovely moment? Was it a little bit too... pulling hard at the emotional strings a bit too hard? Do you think it worked?
Again, I think it balances the right thing between... I don't think it's been too sentimental. It's a reiteration of the I'll Be Home for Christmas stakes. That it's the low stakes that he's set himself, so I'll be home by Christmas. It's a reminder to the audience that he's done that. But I think also, I think it also leads Kate to talk about his like kind of selflessness, because he's saying, oh, I'm not really, because of the whole Ronan thing and stuff. But Kate's conversation that, no, you're taking your time out of your family to protect an idiot like me from being attacked. And I think that is a consequence of what she learned during the conversation that she had to interpret for. If that phone call wasn't there, I think that conversation would have been slightly different. So you can kind of feel the natural progression of the character development come from that. So that conversation, and again, it's the thing I was talking about where the characters dictate the story, in that you can argue that sequence where she says, no, you're a hero, I'd like to be like you because you're selfless, you're helping me, is because she's seen what he's sacrificing in that phone call. And it's a great moment between the two of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it does feel, it, almost when it was played in isolation, I thought, is it going a little bit too hard to kind of enforce that? But I think when you put it in the context of the diner scene, And it's all about sacrifice. I mean, that's I guess if you have the first act is Mai's introduction and the escape, then act two is basically a car chase sequence. Act three of this episode is about Mai maturing and I understand the sacrifice that Clint's made. So as herself, you know, she's all good. I'm in there for the cool costumes and the trick arrows, but actually it's more that it's about sacrifice. And she sees that with the conversation with his son Daniel not actually being home for Christmas. And I think the scene in the diner, once you go put that great gag of actually is the hearing aid still broken? No, he just switched it off, which was quite a fun moment. I think when you got into that conversation and he says, I'm not a role model. And she goes, you absolutely are. It's a real kind of moment of growth and maturity for her as well. And for him to sort of say, you know, recognize, you know, I think the stuff that happened as Ronan compromised him so much that I think, I guess in Hawkeye's mind, he could save the world 20,000 times and he still won't be good enough. But I think that's what Kate's saying is actually, you gave up the Christmas of your family to help me. And that's almost a selfless act. And that's great.
Yeah. I mean, going on the idea that this is the start of act two of an action film, this is the moment where like Arnold Schwarzenegger and he's like a sidekick, a kind of bonding and like learning from each other. And it's the same kind of thing in that. There's an element of it you can pretty much predict certain beats that's going to happen in either episode 4 or 5, which based on what's happened before. So you've got him saying, no, you're a role model. She hasn't explicitly told the story of when her dad died and the fact that he was the reason that she isn't dead, because that we saw in the opening of the first episode. And it's not explicitly said yet, but it is very heavily implied that all the stuff that she's done was because Clint saved her life during the battle for New York. The character at the moment is pretty much saying that she is who she is because of Clint Barton saving her life. Now, and we're gearing up, it's going to be either the end of the next episode or somewhere during episode 5 where the identity of Ronan is going to be revealed. Whether publicly or not, she's definitely going to find out he's Ronan, and then that's going to be like the end of Act Two kind of character spin of it. That's going to change her perception of him, and then how it ends is going to be different. But we are gearing up for the reveal that who she thought Hawkeye was isn't who she thought he was. So she's got this impression that he's like a selfless kind of hero, incapable of doing what Ronan's doing. But then when she finds out who Ronan actually is, that's going to shatter her confidence for the climax against, I don't know, whoever the big bad of the big bad of the episode is. And if it turns out to be her mom who's the actual villain of the whole thing, again, that's going to shatter her illusion of who people are. And as I'm talking, I'm starting to realise that might be the potential end, because there's a link between her realising that Clint Barton is not who she thought she is, and then if her mom is the big bad, which I'm convinced she is, that's going to be another element of, hang on, my mom, who I thought was this person, is turning out to be this person, and the person who I thought was the villain, being her soon-to-be stepdad, isn't actually the villain she thinks he is. It's going to be an interesting dynamic when that happens, and I think we're setting up that. And part of me wishes that is hoping that I'm not predicting it, but going on the tropes that we've seen and what this kind of Christmas action film, I feel we are leading towards that.
Yeah, I think this, if it's Hawkeye, is that it's pretty much playing mostly as expected so far. It's not necessarily a bad thing at all, but I think you can kind of get the structure. Maybe because we watch so many superhero movies now and TV shows, and there's argument. Yeah, there's only so many stories out there. Maybe it's following a particular trope, but I think that's right. I think there's a lot of thrown in the mix. You know, there is. You know, is Kingpin in it? Is her mom the villain? Who is the dad? When she's going to talk about Ronan, is it Yelena? Yelena at the end of Black Widow, you know, she's going after Hawkeye. Assuming she's going to turn up at some point as well.
Florence Pugh is shown, is in the Wikipedia article for this show.
Right, so yeah, she'll be in it at some point. And it'd be because obviously, and I think it was talked about in the last episode that Dan did with Tony, that you know, there's young Avengers up almost, and you've got the new Black Widow and Yelena, you've got the new Hawkeye and Kate. So, you know, they're kind of setting these things up. So it kind of, I think Yelena's going to be there, which is great because Yelena was superb. She's, I think, the best character of Black Widow. So there's so much to come. It's why it almost feels like there's only three episodes left. You know, I hope that actually the one thing it doesn't suffer is that it becomes so crowded, because, you know, this episode was a joy because it was so breezy, because you took time to do the action sequence, you took time to do these scenes between Kate and Clint, and also Maya's introduction as well. They were all giving breathing room, and I imagine things are going to escalate and get bigger and bigger, and maybe this is the episode, this is the last simple episode in inverted commas, but I think there's a lot to cover, and I'd be interested to see kind of how that plays out, because it feels like there could easily be 10 more episodes and of material there. I don't know. A couple of brief things, I think, on that before we move to you've got the obligatory Marvel comic. Let's have a poke fun at the Marvel version. I think I'm pretty certain that the purple costume that she invented for Hawkeye is the original one. They've done it, in Jessica Jones. They've done it in this. They've done it in other shows as well, on films. But I like that Marvel actually aren't necessarily doing the X-Men thing. They are actually embracing the costumes as much as they can, which is great. But, you know, sometimes I think, I don't know, maybe the costume's a bit too ridiculous or wouldn't work. But, it's almost always obligatory to have the, oh, this is what you would look like if you were in a comic. So isn't it a little bit silly sort of thing? So I don't know if that works or not, but obviously that was in there. And the other thing is the dog. The very cute dog that she's adopted. I'm assuming like Kate has this dog in the comics. I feel like there's probably more to hear that comic book fans will get that I don't necessarily know. But I think dog's on one of the character posters. So I'm sure he's like Captain Marvel's cat or something. You know, that there's probably an Avenger Pets comic, I'd imagine, out there. Maybe the dog's in there. I don't know. I love Marvel. I love comic book TV shows and films, but I don't really see with the comics. So I'm sure there's more. I'm sure people will go, oh yeah, that's a dog, and that team's up with Captain Marvel's cat at some point. Who knows? that's the whole story.
It's like the Marvel version of Crypto.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So a few things there. Okay, the final scene. I almost, in some ways, wished actually the diner scene had been the last scene. I think it would be a lovely way to end to Beaver. But obviously, you've got the kind of the cliffhanger moment when they go to the penthouse and they're investigating Kate's soon-to-be father-in-law, Jack, who obviously has a own sword. So what do you think of the kind of final scene?
Again, I think it was built up quite well, and it's at the point where I actually was like, what? No, you can't finish yet. But it's building up to the next act of the story, and I can see why it'd be a good cliffhanger, because it's leading up to the next phase, and we are probably going to learn more about Jack as a character and realize that he's not the big bad I don't think he's the big bad at all, and that in fact he's just, well, not a victim himself, but more like a misunderstanding, or his, the perception of we have of him is different to what he is or something, or I think it's the convergence of the other aspect of the series that needs to be explored, because we've had like two episodes where it's mainly been about the tracksuit mafia. I think we need to get back to the high murder mystery aspect of it, and I think it's again the plot is moving back to that, and you can't really fault it for wanting to get to that moment. No. So.
I think maybe if it was like 10 episodes, maybe that obviously might. I think from an episode structure, I think that would be a lovely scene to end on. But I think with six episodes, you've got to always have those cliffhangers to get to the next bit, to the next bit, to the next bit. And this certainly does that. And I think it certainly sets up some mysteries there as well. You know, what is Sloan Limited, this company? Clint mentions the uncle again. So there's kind of him brought in there as well. And Clint being confronted by his own Ronin sword as well, by Jack as well. That's going to be interesting. There's no about his legacy coming face to face with. So,
yes,
there's certainly a lot there to build on going into the next episode. And I think it will certainly give the next episode, the next three, I think they're going to be quite fast paced again. I don't necessarily think we're going to get an episode. I wouldn't call this episode slow at all. I think it's very fast paced, but I don't think we're going to get an episode like this again, which is kind of a bit more breathing room and it's a bit more fun and character. You know, you're going to probably have a couple of big action sequences, but I think the character work in this episode, I think is kind of, we know where we are now with Kate and Clint for the most part, and now we're going to get into more of the kind of narrative stuff.
No, definitely, yeah.
Cool. Any final thoughts on Echoes before we wrap up then?
The only thing I want to briefly want to mention as well is the performances of Hailee Steinfeld and Jeremy Renner. As you said, they've got a really good dynamic. Hailee Steinfeld is, a few years ago, I didn't really know much about her at all, and I went to see the film The Edge of 17 that she was in, and absolutely loved that film, and pretty much made me a Hailee Steinfeld fan for life. So when they said that she was on here, I was like, oh yes, she's very similar in here to that film, and I think she's an actress who's probably got a kind of a personality of when she's acting, but she can do it really well. The closest analogue I can think of is Keanu Reeves, where there's a lot of similarities in each in each performance, but they always match the character that they're doing. And I think she's got this kind of youthful kind of like naivety, fast talking naivety that she has in a few of the things that I've seen her in. And she does it well. And I think she's a really, really good fit for the MCU. I think she'll do really well going on this, because she's obviously signed a 10-year must be some kind of like 10 years, six, like 20 figure, I don't know, 20 figure merchandising deal,
I'm
or
sure
something like that.
Yeah,
I think that. But I think as well is that I think the fact that she works really well with Jeremy Renner, who's got this kind of old grizzled. He's only 50, actually. I just double checked how old he was, and he's only 50. but he's got the kind of like the gruff mannerisms of like Danny Glover in as a murderer in On the Edge of Retirement, as in like he's in his mid-60s. And as I said earlier, like they've got the way that they kind of bounce off each other, just really work. I think works really well. So you've got Steinfeld's kind of natural enthusiasm bouncing off Jeremy Renner's kind of like, ugh. I just like, basically he wants to go to, it's 7:30 in the evening, I want a cup of tea and go to bed at 9, that kind and he bounces and really well. I think Jeremy Renner does that really well, and I think, and you can kind of, you can tell that Jeremy Renner's enjoying the fact that he's having screen time that's going into double figures, at least double figures of screen time, and he's enjoying being able to do that, being able to kind of give the character a send off, and potentially a send off, we're assuming anyway. And he's got that ability. He's got that kind of ability to just to any non-British listener who have no idea the name I'm going to say, I apologise. But there's a 90s sitcom character called Victor Meldrew, who is the quintessential kind of moaning, kind of forced retiree. Or has become kind of like the old person in fiction, particularly for like sitcom characters. And there are elements of kind of Victor Meldrew in Jeremy Renner performance in Hawkeye, a bit where he's kind of like, I just want to do nothing and just not deal with bullshit of life and stuff. And I think Jeremy Renner does that really well, so I just want to highlight that. I think the two of them are doing really good work in what is my favourite MCU show at the moment.
You're right. They're both superb. I think it's probably Renner's best story as Hawkeye. I think, you know, he's getting those cool action sequences like jumping leaping off a balcony, shooting arrows into a ball pit. You know, he gets moments like that, which are really fun. And he gets to be cool.
I forgot about the ball pit. The ball pit was pretty... I mean, I have no idea how like, as a character, or how anyone can move in a ball pit and not be detected. it's impossible.
Yeah, but he does. Arrows in the feet, yeah, it's great. He's still badass cool. Which is great, and you want of that kind of character to be that. So he's got those cool moments, but he's got that kind of well weariness as well. You know, he's worn down by his experience there. He wants to just basically spend time with family, and you can blame him. And I kind of, in one sense, it feels like this is leading up to Hawkeye passing the baton. But at the same time, I hope we see more of Renner and Steinfeld paying off each other beyond the Hawkeye series. You know, maybe whether he's more of just a mentor and not necessarily being Hawkeye would be fine. But I really hope that, you know, whether they make a Hawkeye series with her, or even a Hawkeye film, or even if like they do a new Avengers movie with like Yelena and new Hawkeye and all the other people he's in there somewhere in that relationship with Seinfeld's Kate as well, because I think they play off really well. And yeah, in terms of Hayley Steinfeld, yeah, I haven't seen her much. I did see her in Bumblebee about a year ago.
Yes,
she was very good in that. She was good, yeah. It's the only Transformers movie. I've only seen like three Transformers movies. It's the only one that I liked.
Yes.
The one's terrible. But I like that film anyway. But she was a really kind of, again, she was fun. She was engaging. She had some charisma in that as well. She really kind of held her own in her lead in that film. And I actually can see her being a leading character. One of the things that, you know, like the original Avengers movie that was so good was seeing the, like, these big personalities come together. And, you know, and we talk about Yelena, played by Florence Pugh, who stole the show in that. I can't wait to see Yelena and Kate bounce off each other. It's going to happen, you know. And with other characters as well, you know, Shang-Chi as well. You know, he's quite fun and lively as well. You know, I want to see what these characters do and how they bounce each other when they get to whatever crossover movie, whether it's going to be Avengers or something else. I want to see these characters interact now. And I think she's absolutely going to hold her own.
A quick question I've got as well is that before WandaVision, Kevin Feige said that you would not have to watch the TV series to understand what's happening in the movies. I cannot see how that's possible. The end of Loki, especially. I mean, well, I think end of Loki is probably just background support information that will probably get paid.
Yeah.
That you probably will probably be a line of dialogue in a future Avengers film. But I can't see how you suddenly have Kate Bishop show up in a future film and not be able to spend too long with exposition, because one of the most surprising aspects of Infinity War was that it didn't bother with exposition. It assumed you knew everything, and the film was a lot better for it. And as much as I can't wait, to have Yelena and Kate show up in a sort of on the big screen, because Hayley Steinfeld, I think, could actually headline a film. I think she's got that fan base with her. She's got, I don't know, at least over 10 million followers on Instagram, which is usually the metric for fame at the moment. But if she suddenly appears in a film without any origin stuff, because there's probably a bunch of people who won't be assimilating every single piece of MCU information, they'll skip.
Yeah, well, you can only get it by what Disney Plus. Well, if you don't get Disney Plus, you're not going to see it.
The only thing that's in the back of my mind is the impact in perhaps the future appearances after all this. Are we going to, if Kate Bishop suddenly appears on and we're like, yes, Kate Bishop's here, and then we have to sit through half an hour of stuff we've already seen, is hopefully seen, or like some really lazily Suicide Squad style exposition. That might have an impact. And That's the only kind of worry that I have at the moment of this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, like Falcon and Winter Soldier, for example, you could see that he takes the mantle of Captain America from Steve Rogers at the end of Endgame, and then he's now in this now Captain America 4 movie. And you could do that without the Falcon and the Soldier. Falcon and Winter Soldier gives the context of his character, I think, because I forget the name of the character now, Anthony Mackie. Sam, that's it. I think Captain America and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I think the biggest success of that was giving Sam some depth and some characterization, apart from being the quippy kind of sidekick to Steve Rogers. So now you really feel that he's earned the title of being Captain America. But I can see how that movie, if you cut that out and you go from Endgame to Captain America 4, I think that would work. I do agree on this one. I think I'm not sure how it's going to end, and maybe because we don't know how it's going to end. Maybe it's going to end with Hawkeye going, I'm going to give up the mantle and you're going to be the Hawkeye. I'm going to train you. So maybe he's training Kate in the first big movie, and maybe that's how it'll work. I don't know. I think if Clint dies in this, I don't think it will. I don't think it'll be that tragic, particularly given how Endgame happened with Natasha. I think maybe he'll go just settle down with his family. But if this is Clint's last ever appearance to the MCU, I think you probably wouldn't work, because like, where's Clint? But I think if this series ends with him going, I'm going to now train you, Kate, you're going to become the Hawkeye, you're going to replace me, and then you have a scene where he's training her, that might work, maybe. But I guess how they do it. I mean, to be honest, I've got faith in MCU. There's very little in the MCU that I don't like. and a lot of it I absolutely love. And I think I would argue there's probably been nothing in the MCU that's been bad. You know, I think there are things like Thor: Dark World suffers a little bit, and Iron Man 2 feels too much like it went just set up to be an individual movie and stuff. And but for the most part, I think everything, I could watch anything from the MCU and I would enjoy it. And there's some good stuff in there, so I think it'll work anyway. And I'm pretty faithful as a fan now to the MCU. I'm sure they do a good job, but I do see what you're saying. I think unlike Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think this one's a little bit hard. If this is Hawkeye's, as in Clint Barton, Hawkeye's final appearance, I think there needs to be, he needs to set up maybe his training. How I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes.
Yeah,
cool. So I think that comes to the end of our discussion on Echoes. I think an episode that we both absolutely loved, and a show that we're continuing to enjoy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Brilliant. So Matt, if you want to talk about Hawkeye or anything else you're doing, where can we find you online?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook under the username Pickadisc. So if you want to yell at me for getting things wrong, feel free. I might ignore you or not. It depends. You can follow me on those things. The name Pickadisc is also the name of a podcast I do called Pickadisc, surprisingly, where I speak to people about albums that they want to talk about for whatever reason they want to. And I'm also, as Baz said earlier, one of the regular co-hosts of the Shipwrecked and Comatose Red Dwarf podcast, also on the We Made This Network.
But yeah, you can find me at Twitter as Baz Greenland, and you can also find me on a number of podcasts, We Made This. So talking of British, a kind of slightly dodgy effects there, I host the Dot 2 podcast, The TARDIS Crew, my son Ben, and I think Matt, we're going to get you on at some point next year to discuss Dot 2 as well. I'm also one of the main hosts of Authorized Podcast Only and Alias Podcast, as well as popping up on other places like Podcast 616 on occasion too. So thanks for joining us for another episode, and remember, we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616 and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/wemadethis. Hawkeye is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, and until then, just keep trying to hit that bullseye.
Elsewhere on We Made This. We are Starfleet, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
So it'd be a bit of a drawback as well when you're confronting other people. You know, for instance, later on when all our conversations with the president are very confrontational, right, from both sides, and it becomes a huge verbal tug of war at times, but it makes for great television. And it also makes for really good scenes for Michael Burnham. I like her being challenged. I like her having to question herself, because it makes her a much more better character, I think.
Yeah, and Michael seems to be the kind of person, like, once she makes a decision, she's not going to question that again. She's not going to second guess herself. She's, she even says in season 3, "I would rather regret something I did than something I didn't."
Free with this month's issue.
They did this weird thing at Reading Festival one year where they got a guy and a girl up on stage with them from opposite ends of the barrier at the front. Yeah. And got them to make out for an entire song. And these people didn't know each other, because the girl was quite near me and she definitely had a boyfriend.
Oh.
But they went for it. Even at the time, I thought, this is strange.
Yeah.
Like, what's that about? You know, like, that's an odd thing to ask two strangers to do.
Probably there was a lot of pressure.
Movie-versaries.
Because the trailer is full of very odd camera angles, or like odd close-ups, like too close, kind of like almost like a fisheye lens kind of look at one point. There's a whole bunch of different things that are completely bizarre.
For sure. And a lot of the cinematography, it seems like he uses lots of wide-angle lenses.
Mm.
And that generally, you know, if you use like a wide-angle lens for like a close-up, it gives you a sense of unease. And you see that throughout. So many wide-angle shots, and it's just like, it just makes you feel a bit weird.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.